If you got your Bibles, go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 13. We're going to be in there this morning. Before we get there, I just want to say, you know, yesterday, it's not very often that you have certain okay thoughts when someone you love passes away. And yesterday, we celebrated the life of Hazel Troop, and that's what these flowers are here. And those of you who didn't have maybe the opportunity to meet Hazel, she was a major part of my life. She was like another grandma to me. And she was that way to a lot of people. And for me, even though I will miss her, and I will miss driving to my parents' house. Used to, when I was in high school, I would drive home from basketball practice. She'd be sitting on the porch, and I'd just stop by. And you couldn't just stop for 10 minutes and talk to Hazel. You were going to be there for a couple hours. And so I would stop by. And, of course, Mom would be like, where are you at? Okay. And just some of the wonderful talks that I got to have with Hazel, and just getting to celebrate her life yesterday. And it's a great honor for her to be a part of my life. And so I know she probably touched many of you guys, but just in saying that, she is a great example, a great mentor, great mother, grandmother, and so on. And so I just have to say that it was an honor to get to know her. And I know for you all, it was the same. So anyway, in Mark chapter 13, we're going to start there. We've been in Mark this past Christian calendar year. And we're getting ready to kind of wind down this Christian calendar year as Advent comes around the corner after Thanksgiving. We have Christ the King Sunday next Sunday. Then we kind of dive into Advent in another year of the Christian calendar. But in Mark chapter 13 is kind of an interesting chapter here. And I just have to say thank you, Todd, for having me do this chapter. You'll know why here in a minute. All right, let's start in verse 1. And he came out of the temple. One of his disciples said to him, "Look, teacher, what wonderful stones and what wonderful buildings." And Jesus said to him, "Do you see these great buildings? There will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down." And as he sat on the Mount of Olives opposite of the temple, Peter and James and John and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign when all these things are about to be accomplished?" And Jesus began to say to them, "See that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name, saying, 'I am he,' and they will lead many astray. And when you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. These are but the beginning of the birth pains." So as you can see, Todd gives me the apocalyptic chapter. In kind of thinking through this, I'll just be honest with you. I wrestled with this scripture all week long, taught it on Wednesday night with the youth. And they probably were thinking, you know, he's still wrestling with it. He didn't really know where he's going. You know, I made a statement at the beginning of when I was getting ready to teach on Wednesday night about how we're going to connect these two things. And we get done, and Aaron asked me, "You never connected the two things. Well, how do those connect?" It was kind of like, oh, yeah, I went a whole different route. But it's been something that's been weighing on my mind. And the part that bothered me, if you can say that, is you have a Jesus who is very active and great teaching and how all these things, and then all of a sudden the switch flips in a way, and now all of a sudden Jesus becomes like the captain on Jaws. Three go into the water and one come out, and that kind of thing. It's like end times kind of thing, and all of a sudden it's like doomsday all over. And you know, we have this kind of passage that jumps in there, and he starts, and we just stopped at the beginning, and he continues on of all these things that will happen. And I'm sitting here going, wow, did he like get into a weird dark mode all of a sudden? And I started to kind of think about it and what maybe triggered it. And if we really kind of pay attention to what goes on here, a lot of times what happens is we read those first two verses about the temple, and then we just keep moving on, and we read all this stuff about this end times doomsday kind of thing that is coming, and we miss those two first verses. We just blow right past them. Because, you know, let's think. You know, we're gawkers, right? When there's a wreck, we like to gawk, right? So, or when there's something bad on the news, it couldn't be just enough that a general had an affair. We want to know the details. We want to read the emails. We want to know all the stuff that went on, right? You know, if there's a car wreck, we want to know who was in it. Are they hurt? Who else was in it? Whose fault was it? Are the police doing the right thing? Is insurance going to cover it? You know, we want to know every little detail of what's going on. And the same thing happens here when Jesus makes a statement because of a statement that one of the disciples makes. How beautiful are these buildings? How beautiful is the temple? How beautiful this is. And Jesus responds by saying, yeah, it's all going to be destroyed. What? I was just making an observation, Jesus. You didn't have to, like, you know, throw a monkey wrench in the whole plan of what I was saying. You know, I was just making a statement. But in that statement is so much there. But then we keep blowing on right by it because we want to know the details. Just like the disciples that sit there privately with Jesus, Peter, James, John, and Andrew, ask Jesus, well, how do we know this is going to happen? Because that's how we are, right? We want to know when, where, and what time, right? Right? That's how we are. We want to know all the details. What's going to happen? How are we going to know that this time is coming? When are we going to know when the temple is going to crash? I want to know what's going on. Who's going to be involved? Who's going to be crashing the temple? What's going on? That kind of stuff. And why are we all going to be in this boat together? They want to know all the details, right? Just like, you know, you're not like that like me, right? You know, I saw a wreck driving home. The first thing I do is I call my dad because he's a cop. He'll know, right? Who was in it? And that kind of thing. And what's going on? You know, we want to know the details, and we blow right past the whole point that Jesus is trying to make. You know, there's a movie that I really enjoy watching. It's called V for Vendetta. I don't know if any of you have ever seen it. It's a British film, kind of based in a futuristic setting, but yet not a futuristic setting. In other words, it's present day, but it's future, some type of war has happened. There's not a whole lot of details of what goes on with the war, so it's kind of like a futuristic, apocalyptic kind of movie, only it's not that in that way. But basically, this government, the British government, has established a whole new reign over the people in a way that there's a lot of regulations. There's curfew for everyone. There's people driving around in trucks that can listen in on your conversations in your house to know if you're planning a terrorist attack or if you're doing this or if you're just, you know, making omelets, okay? And they're going to watch every little thing that you're doing, okay? And it's Big Brother to the extreme. And so the whole movie kind of goes, well, there's this character that develops. It's kind of the liberator character. You know, we always like those liberator characters. When there's oppression, we want the liberator, right? I took a class in college that was kind of, we looked at film stuff, and he always says, he used that, the liberator character is, we want that Jesus character. We always look for that savior character because it makes us happy, right? And it's a good ending, someone that rises up against oppression, and boom, here we go. Well, V acts as that person, but he has this mask. He doesn't show anybody who he is. He wears this mask all the time. It's a little creepy looking mask too. His white face and a weird smile, you know. It's like the Grinch smile, only evil. Well, Grinch, evil. Anyway, but we have this whole setup, though, of this oppressive government, and now this liberator is showing up. And he shows up, and he meets this young lady, and her name's Evie. Evie, get the connection? Anyway, it's not really a big deal in the movie, but it's kind of cool. It's just how the writer tries to make a connection. And Evie is okay with the way things are because she doesn't want to interrupt the status quo. In other words, it's mostly she's okay with the way things are because she's afraid. And in the midst of all the stuff that's going on, V ends up kind of setting up this whole big ordeal where he wants the people to stand for what is right for them. And in doing so, he's going to, on the 5th of November, which is a very popular day within the movie, and 5th of November, there's going to be this big explosion of a big prominent building in London. As a sign to say, we the people will not take this oppression anymore. And that's kind of the way it is. And Evie's sitting there going, how does blowing a building stop oppression? And he makes a statement. And I probably will miss part of it. But he says, blowing up a building can change the world. And because he goes on to kind of explain, the building is not what the big deal is. You know, it's just stones, it's brick, it's mortar, that kind of stuff. But what it stands for, the structure that it is, can change the world. Something to destroy the structure that it represents, the government that it represents, the oppression that it represents, can change the world. And that's his statement to Evie. And he gives of his whole life in it, and you can go watch the movie or whatever. But I kind of probably just spilled the beans. But anyway, sorry, spoiler alert. I should have said that beforehand. But you have this whole thing that builds up. is Jesus' statement kind of the same thing? That was the question I kind of was asking myself. Is Jesus' statement the same thing? I mean, if we're honest, if we were to hear, this mic is built for Todd's ear. And so, or something, I don't know. I think he's got it, you know, booby trapped for me or something. Me and Nathan can never get this thing right. Maybe I should like feed it through my beard. Anyway, wow, sorry. That was an ADD moment. I'm moving on. But we have this statement that Jesus makes. And if that statement, let's be honest, in our day and time, if that statement of declaring that a temple would be destroyed in our day and time, that would be a possible act of terrorism. I mean, let's think about it. Okay? If you were to hear something that represented the temple in that day, in our day right now, and considering all that has happened in our world, just that statement alone would have got him detained for at least 48 hours. In thinking about it. So I started to kind of think, you know, sometimes we just move right on by that statement. And the disciples did too, because the only thing they caught out of it was that, oh wow, everything's going to end and that must be the end times. And they totally miss, I think, what Jesus is trying to say. You see, we have a lot of structures and things that we like because we're people of structure. We like, you know, as much as we may complain about the government, we like the government because the government gives us kind of these boundaries of way to live. They create structure and order within our lives, you know, but you know, we like to complain about it. Maybe a candidate didn't win or did win or whatever. And we like to, you know, rustle about on that. But the truth is, we like government because it brings structure. We like religion because it brings structure to our lives. Okay? And if we're honest, sometimes we like being a Christian just because it brings structure to our lives. We have a faith statement that we can hold on to. And I've been reading a book by a professor of mine in college, and he wrote this book called The Impossible Mentor, referring to Jesus as the impossible mentor. And we, a lot of times, use Jesus as this unattainable being, and we miss the whole humanity of who Jesus is. And the statement he makes is, we're okay with saying we're a Christian and that we're okay with accepting God's grace and forgiveness and mercy and all those things and all that stuff that is lavished upon us. And not that those are bad things, but yet we miss transformation. We miss the point of becoming like Jesus. And what Jesus is making in this statement when he says all this temple structure has been down. I mean, if we go back in chapter 12 and the whole context of what's going on in chapter 12, where Jesus is in the middle of the temple, he's just entered and overthrown tables and done all this stuff and tried to make a statement within the temple that what you are doing is missing the point. And this is the only way I can get your attention. They were creating the temple in a way that was excluding people from worshiping God. They were causing, even though they were a people that thought they were oppressed by the Roman Empire, they were oppressing others in the same way. They were already in a moment that, if we're honest, looks like apocalypse. Because there's a writer that talked about apocalypse. I'm blanking on his name right now. Probably should have wrote it down. But he talks about all groups who have been oppressed have their own version of apocalypse. See, apocalypse isn't necessarily meaning the end of all the world. Apocalypse is kind of the bringing up the dangers of what's going to happen, the ending of something. Okay? You know, Daniel talks about it within the Babylonian Empire. We have this apocalyptic literature within Daniel and talking about the Babylonian Empire overtaking the people who were in Europe during when William Wilberforce rose up being against slavery. The people that were slaves in that time created their own apocalyptic literature, so to speak, within songs. The African American community during the 1860s all the way up through the civil rights movement created their own apocalyptic language literature with their songs and understanding that they were being oppressed in a certain way. Oppressed people create apocalyptic literature. But also what tends to happen that we sometimes push away from is those who are being oppressed often turn the tables and become the oppressor. And this is exactly what was going on with what was going on in the temple at that time. The people had developed this structure that made them comfortable and okay with the way things were. It didn't require any transformation of their life. It just required actions that seemed holy or actions that didn't seem holy not to be done. And it was just a motive of living, a walking through the motions, this structure that made them feel safe, but had no transformation within it. The same thing goes on today. You know, we're getting ready to celebrate a wonderful time of year. You know, Nathan was my youth minister for a few years, and I could always know it was getting ready to be Christmas time because as soon as Halloween was over, Christmas music, you know, Frankie and Dean and all of them were always playing in Nathan's office about November 1st. And I guess it rubbed off on me because about November 4th, I was turned on the Christmas music and Yvette wasn't liking it. And because it's like, it's too early. But starting to listen to Christmas music, but Christmas is right around the corner. Even though Thanksgiving's this week, you know, Walmart's had stuff out since like August. And we've had this whole idea, Christmas is coming, you know, and we get excited about it. But Christmas, you know, it's hard to ignore a major part of Christmas is represented by what's going to happen Friday. I don't know how many of you guys are going to go do it. I don't. I don't like people. I mean, that didn't come out right. It didn't come out right at all. I don't like crowds. I get like panic attacks, you know. And, you know, I can walk into Crest when it's busy and just be like, you know, I got to look down. I went to Boston and visited a friend and was riding the public transportation. I had to look at my phone the entire time so I wouldn't like hyperventilate or anything. But anyway, I don't like crowds and all that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of people that are going to be going out Friday. Walmart has even gone so far that Black Friday is not even Black Friday anymore. It's now Black Thursday night. You know, they're having their workers have to come back on like 7 o'clock on Thursday. They don't even get all of Thanksgiving off because they're getting ready for Black Friday. It has almost become, let's just be honest, the consumer buying gifts thing has become its own religion. The idea that I've got to get all of my stuff, I mean, if you watch all of the commercials, it props up and honors the people who are the best shoppers, who get the best deals for Christmas. I mean, if you watch the Target commercials and the Kohl's commercials and all this kind of stuff, you know, ready to go. Saw the Lowe's commercial. I don't know if you saw it. It was like they were trying to create this heist kind of thing, and Grandma was going to make snacks, and Aunt Jill was going to do the run-in. And the I don't know if you've seen that Lowe's commercial, but the whole idea is it's created its own little culture, and let's just be honest, it's almost like a religion. People make traditions of it. They get so excited about doing that stuff, and it's all about the gifts and getting all the stuff. We do the same thing when it comes time sometimes to do our presents for DHS kids or for our kids here on Wednesday nights and things like that. And we get so excited about the gift part of it that we miss the person involved. You know, we get so excited about the buying of the gifts and making sure we get the right gift and making sure the kids get exactly what they want and that kind of stuff and writing letters to Santa Claus and doing all this stuff. We get so caught up in the gifts that we just kind of created our own little holiday that looks nothing at all like what Jesus, the whole story of Jesus is about. All because of that one story about the Magi. But what about the shepherds who brought nothing but just showed up? The major gift that they had was to praise and share the word about who Jesus was doing, or who Jesus had come, and the Messiah was here. It wasn't have anything to do with gifts. I love gifts too. You know, who doesn't like to get a gift? I mean, you know, how many of you have gotten a gift and said, no, I don't want that? We like them. Let's just be honest. But when it becomes its own religion, its own culture of consuming what I want and what I need and spending, I mean, we're going to spend more money on Christmas this year that could probably, I think the stat was nearly $300 billion. Is that right? $300 billion on Christmas this year. The number right now for what it would cost to solve the impure water situation around the world for those who do not have clean water to drink is only about 20 million. 20 million, not 20 billion, 20 million. And we're going to spend 300 billion just on a month of madness. Kind of puts things in perspective. It has become its own structure. Just like the Jesus was talking about the temple, there will be no stone left on one another. Jesus was trying to create imagery for the structures you find yourself so comfortable in have become something that is not representative of me and my Father. It looks nothing like the kingdom. Jesus was not about government, politics, policy, presence, that kind of stuff, consumerism. Jesus was about the kingdom. Not a kingdom, the kingdom. Jesus was about, follow me and be transformed to be like me. That was what was going on. But we can miss that completely and just go on and talk about what the end times are going to be because we want to know all the details. We can get so excited about worrying about what's going to happen when the world ends and what happens that we miss out on what it is being the kingdom right now. Right here, right now. You know, a great example for me was Hazel, who lived that out. She took me in like I was one of her own grandkids, mowing her lawn, treating me nice and talking to me and sharing stories. She treated it like the kingdom is now, taking care of her family, taking care of her people. And I feel like I love what Nathan started with the youth, in that our youth are going and sharing life now with those who are homebound. And kind of what, for me, it's like what was given to me when I was a teenager, I feel like I can give back to those in that way. It's a whole different look at the world. The idea that a bunch of teenagers would go hang out with some widows that stay home at night, they can't get out, that's against cultural norms. But you know what? Even when I feel busy or whatever, they're the ones who are begging me, can we go see them? That's transformation. We get so caught up in the structures that make us feel comfortable about where we are and who we are that we miss out on being transformed and changing of our perspective, what it is to be a follower of Jesus, portraying the kingdom now, not just in the future.